Welcome to the BritishBattles.com podcast on the Battle of Waterloo, the battle fought on 18th June 1815 that ended the dominance of the French Emperor Napoleon over Europe and saw the end of an epoch. My name is John Mackenzie. I am the editor of BritishBattles.com. I write the text for the entries in BritishBattles.com. I also select the illustrations and draft the maps under my nom de carte of John Fawkes. I would invite you to look at the battle site on BritishBattles.com. There you will see a number of illustrations and maps. I hope you enjoy this podcast, and I invite you to send me your comments on info@BritishBattles.com. The Battle of Waterloo was fought on 18th June 1815, just south of Brussels in modern Belgium. British, Germans, Belgians, Dutch and Prussians fought against the French Grande Armée. The Allied commanders were the Duke of Wellington, Marshal Blücher and the Prince of Orange. The French Grande Armée was commanded by the Emperor Napoleon. 23,000 British troops, with 44,000 Allied troops and 160 guns, fought against 74,000 French troops and 250 guns. The Prussian army comprised around 110,000 men. The winners of the Battle of Waterloo were the British, Germans, Belgians and Dutch, with their Prussian allies. On the British Battles website, you will find a description of the uniforms and weapons in use at the battle. In 1814, 25 years of war came to an end with the surrender of the Emperor Napoleon and his banishment to the Mediterranean island of Elba. The European powers began the task of restoring the continent to normality and peace. The Bourbons resumed their interrupted reign in France with King Louis XVIII. But on the 1st of March 1815, Napoleon escaped from Elba and landed in France. 19 days later, Napoleon was in Paris and resumed his title of emperor. Napoleon's army rallied to him. The many French soldiers, captured during the years of fighting up to 1814 and now released, enabled Napoleon to reform his powerful Grande Armée. The European allies reassembled their armies and prepared to resume the war to overthrow the Emperor yet again. Napoleon resolved to attack the British, Prussian, Belgian and Dutch armies before the other powers could come to their assistance. He marched into the area that is now Belgium. Napoleon defeated the Prussians under Marshal Blücher at the Battle of Ligny on 16th June 1815, driving the Prussians away to the northeast. On the same day, Marshal Ney fought the Battle of Quatre Bras against troops of the Duke of Wellington's Allied Army, forcing Wellington to fall back towards Brussels. Napoleon sent Marshal Grouchy in pursuit of the Prussians, while he advanced on Wellington's army. Assured by Blücher that the Prussians would join him for the conclusive battle against Napoleon, Wellington, on the afternoon of 17th June 1815, halted his army to give battle to the French. The Duke of Wellington took up a position on the Brussels Road, where it emerges from the woods of Soigny, south of the village of Waterloo. The road crosses a low ridge, behind which Wellington positioned his army facing south, and descends into a valley before rising on the other side to a further ridge. In the valley, below the first crest, lay La Haye Sainte farm, and on the road at the southern side of the valley, below the second crest, stood La Belle Alliance farm. During most of the Battle of Waterloo, the Germans occupied La Haye Sainte, and the French used La Belle Alliance as a headquarters. To the north of the first crest, the Namur Road crossed the Brussels Road. The main British, German, Belgian and Dutch positions lay along the Namur Road behind the first crest. The French approach to the battle was from the country to the south of La Belle Alliance and across the valley. In the valley to the front of the right wing of the Allied line stood Hougoumont Farm, the key to Wellington's right flank. It was held by the light companies of the British Coldstream and Third Guards, and there would be fighting around Hougoumont all day during the battle. Lying by the road leading to the centre of Wellington's position, the capture of La Haye Sainte was a crucial goal for the French army. To the east of the Duke's army lay Papelotte, another farm that would be the centre of a ferocious struggle, particularly as the Prussian army appeared on the field at the end of the battle. In the Duke's centre stood the farm of Mont-Saint-Jean, used as a headquarters and hospital. It rained heavily during the night of 17th June 1815. The French artillery commanders insisted to Napoleon that the French attack did not begin until the ground had dried out sufficiently for the guns to manoeuvre without sticking in the mud. The French attack began at 11 a.m. on 18th June 1815. The French bombardment of Hougoumont Farm on the extreme right of the Allied line began the battle. The British artillery on the ridge behind the farm replied, cannonading the French infantry massed for the attack on the far side of the valley. At midday, the French general, Prince Jérôme, ordered the assault on Hougoumont, and the French infantry columns of his division moved forward to begin the day-long struggle around the farm buildings. At about 1:30 p.m., Marshal Ney brought forward 74 French guns over the ridge opposite La Haye Sainte, followed by the 17,000 infantry of d'Erlon's corps, to begin the attack on the Duke of Wellington's centre and left. The French cannonade began, and was later described by Allied veterans as the heaviest they had experienced. The Duke ordered his infantry battalions to move back behind the ridge and to lie down. This had the effect of shielding them from the worst of the cannonade. Only Bylandt's Belgian-Dutch brigade was left on the exposed slope and suffered heavily. After half an hour, the barrage stopped, giving way to the roar of drums as Ney's columns advanced to the attack. The French infantry passed La Haye Sainte and marched up to the crest of the ridge, where Picton's 5th Division was positioned. As part of the French advance, a furious assault began on La Haye Sainte, held by the King's German Legion, which was to continue intermittently for the rest of the day until the German troops ran out of ammunition and were finally overwhelmed. As the French infantry approached the hedge at the top of the ridge, the line of British infantry stood up, fired a volley and charged, driving back the massed French columns. Allied cavalry formations, mostly British regiments, were ordered to charge in support of the infantry attack. The Household Brigade, the Union Brigade, and Vivian's Hussar Brigade. It is notoriously difficult to pull up cavalry committed to a charge, and the British regiments did not readily respond to recall orders. The Union Brigade continued to attack across the valley. These regiments charged up to the French gun line on the far ridge, where they were in turn overwhelmed by French cavalry. General Ponsonby, commanding the Union Brigade, was killed. It is of note that of the three regiments in the Union Brigade, two, the Scots Greys and Inniskillings, had not served in the Peninsular War and lacked battle experience. The time was 3 p.m. and there was a lull in the battle, the only active fighting being the continuing attack on Hougoumont at the western end of the line, sucking in more and more men from Reilly's French corps. The battle began slowly to swing in the Allies' favour as Blücher's Prussian army arrived on the field in the southeast. Napoleon ordered Ney to capture La Haye Sainte, considering the farm to be the key of the Allied position. Ney launched this assault with two battalions he found to hand, and during the operation formed the view that the Allied army was withdrawing. It is likely that the movements he saw were casualties or prisoners moving to the rear. It was on this impetuous assumption that Ney launched his massive cavalry attack on the Allied line. Initially, the French attacking force was Milhaud's Cavalry Corps of Cuirassiers. Before the French could reach the Allied line, the infantry formed squares, interlaced with artillery batteries. The French cuirassiers flowed around the squares, but were unable to penetrate them. During the next 3 hours, some 12 French cavalry attacks were made up to the ridge and back. Napoleon, while deprecating the initial attack as premature, felt bound to commit increasing numbers of cavalry to support the assault. At around 5:30 p.m., Ney launched the final French cavalry charge. There were too many regiments, fresh mingled with exhausted. The attack failed yet again. Ney now launched the sustained infantry assault on La Haye Sainte, which was overwhelmed. This success was too late to change the outcome of the battle, as the Prussian assault in the southeast on Plains Noires was seriously threatening the French position. Sure that the Allied line was at breaking point, Ney sent desperately to the Emperor for more troops to attack. Napoleon was at this point deploying the Guard to drive the Prussians back from Plains Noires. Once this had been achieved, Napoleon resolved to launch the Guard at the main Allied line. By the time the Guard was available to carry out the attack on the ridge, Wellington had reorganized his forces, and the opportunity that Ney had this time correctly identified had passed. As the Guard began its advance on the ridge, a deserting French cavalry officer galloped up to the Allied line and warned of the Guard's approach. The Guard marched up to La Belle Alliance, where Napoleon stood aside and left the command of the attack to Ney. Ney led the 5 battalions up the left-hand side of the Brussels Road. As they climbed the ridge, the columns came under fire from a curve of Allied batteries assembled to meet them. The middle guard threw back the British battalions of Halkett's brigade, but were assaulted by the Belgian and Dutch troops of General Chassé and Colonel Detmers, who drove them back down the hill. The 3rd Regiment of Chasseurs approached the ridge opposite Maitland's brigade of foot guards. Wellington called to the brigade commander, "Now, Maitland, now's your time." One authority had Wellington saying, "Up, guards, ready." The 1st foot guards stood, fired a volley and charged with the bayonet, driving the French guard back down the hill. The last of the French guard regiments, the 4th Chasseurs, came up in support as the British guards withdrew over the ridge. Sir John Colborne brought the 52nd Light Infantry round to outflank the French column as it passed his brigade, fired a destructive volley into the left flank of the Chasseurs, and attacked with the bayonet. The whole of the guard was driven back down the hill, and the French army began a general retreat to the cry of "La garde recule!" Within 15 minutes, Wellington appeared on the skyline and waved his hat to give the signal for a general attack in pursuit of the French troops. The British, Belgian, Dutch, and German troops poured forward, and the French retreat became a rout. 3 battalions of the Old Guard fought to the end to enable the Emperor to escape from the battlefield as the Allied troops, including the Prussians, closed in. General Cambronne is reputed to have answered a call to surrender with the words, "The Guard dies but does not surrender." The Battle of Waterloo is reputed to have ended with an historic meeting between the Duke of Wellington and Marshal Blücher, who had kept his promise to Wellington to come to his assistance. The effect of the Prussian attack on Napoleon's right flank was decisive in enabling the Allies to win the Battle of Waterloo. The 3rd map on the British battle's site, showing the position at 7 p.m. on 18th June 1815, illustrates the effect of the Prussian assault on the French and the relief that it brought to the Allied army positioned along the ridge. The British elevation of the Battle of Waterloo to the status of a national icon has resulted in many British accounts of the battle failing to do justice to the conduct at the battle of other nationalities forming the Allied army, particularly the contribution of the Prussian army. The Battle of Waterloo could not have been won if Marshal Blücher had not fulfilled his promise to the Duke of Wellington and delivered his devastating attack on Napoleon's right flank around Plancenoit. The small chateau of Hougoumont stood before the extreme right of the Allied position. The Duke of Wellington formed the view that the chateau was the key to his flank, and garrisoned it with the light companies of the Coldstream and 3rd Foot Guards, under Lieutenant Colonel James MacDonnell of the Coldstream Guards. Nassauers and guardsmen held the woods to the front of the building. The British troops took over the range of chateau buildings on 17th June 1815, and spent the night fortifying them, building fire steps and loopholing the walls. All the gates were blocked, other than the main gate on the northern side to provide access. At 11 a.m. on 18th June, Prince Jerome's division began the battle with his attack on Hougoumont, the French driving the Nassauers out of the woods and attacking the chateau. The French surged around the buildings and charged the main gate in the face of a rush of British guardsmen headed by Colonel MacDonnell to keep them out. The entrance was damaged, and there ensued a struggle by the British to shut the gate and by the French to force it open. Colonel MacDonnell and his party of officers and sergeants forced the gate shut, and Sergeant Graham of the Coldstream Guards put the bar in place. The few French soldiers who had penetrated the entrance were hunted through the farm buildings. During the rest of the day, Hougoumont was subject to sustained attack by Jerome's troops, with assistance from a further French division. The chateau garrison was reinforced with more companies from the 2 Foot Guards battalions of Byng's Guards Brigade. When, during the afternoon, the supply of ammunition in the chateau became critically low, Sergeant Fraser of the 3rd Guards went to the main line and returned with a wagon of cartridges, thereby enabling the defence to continue. By the end of the battle, the chateau had been set ablaze by howitzer shells, and the buildings were heaped with British casualties. The French were unable to capture Hougoumont, and their casualties filled the woods and fields around it. The 2 battalions that defended Hougoumont suffered 500 dead and wounded out of a strength of 2,000 men. Some years after the Battle of Waterloo, an English clergyman bequeathed £500 to be given to the bravest Briton from the battle. The selection was referred to the Duke of Wellington, who nominated Lieutenant Colonel MacDonnell of the Coldstream Guards for his defence of the Chateau of Hougoumont. Colonel MacDonnell gave half the sum to Sergeant Graham, the soldier who put the gate bar in place. Annually, the Coldstream Guards celebrate the defence of Hougoumont with the ceremony of the Hanging of the Brick. The farm of La Haye Sainte stands on the west side of the main Brussels road, beneath the ridge, 200 metres in front of the centre of the Allied position. As the Emperor Napoleon urged on Marshal Ney, La Haye Sainte was the key to the Allied line and had to be taken at all costs. The garrison to whom it fell to resist the French attack that began soon after d'Erlon's assault was from Major Baring's 2nd Light Battalion of Colonel Baron Ompteda's 2nd King's German Legion Brigade. The King's German Legion expected only to spend the night in the farm, and did not discover until the morning that they were required to hold it for the battle. By then the main gates had been burnt on the soldiers' campfires, and little could be done to put the farm in a state of defence in the short time before the battle began. The King's German Legion soldiers of the farm garrison were largely spectators as d'Erlon's attack swept past and up the ridge to the main Allied position, to be pursued back to their lines by the British cavalry counterattack. It was then that Ney's attack on the farm was launched, on the orders of the Emperor Napoleon. From that moment, the King's German Legion troops fought for their lives until late in the afternoon, when, with their ammunition finished and the farm in flames, the garrison was annihilated or driven out. 39 of some 360 soldiers survived the battle. At around 2 p.m, Major General Ponsonby's Union Brigade of Heavy Dragoons, the 1st Royal Dragoons, the 2nd Royal Scots Greys, and 6th Inniskilling Dragoons, charged d'Erlon's infantry columns as they reached the British line. As the Scots Greys passed the 92nd Gordon Highlanders, the Gordons attempted to advance with them, holding the troopers' stirrups. The charge built up momentum, and the British heavies launched themselves on the French infantry, the Scots Greys shouting, "Scotland forever!" Sergeant Charles Ewart of the Scots Greys rode the officer of the French 45th Infantry, carrying the regimental standard, incorporating an imperial eagle at the top of the staff. Ewart cut down the four escorts and the standard-bearer and bore the standard and eagle away. The Union Brigade cut through the French infantry and, now out of control, continued the charge across the valley and up the far incline to the French guns, where they sabred a number of gunners. The British cavalry were counterattacked by French lancers and suffered such heavy casualties as to eliminate the brigade from the battle. The brigade commander, General Ponsonby, was killed. As the Duke of Wellington grumblingly complained, "The British cavalry never know when to stop charging." Throughout this encounter, Ewart defended his captured French standard and eagle against repeated attacks by French cavalrymen attempting to recover the lost emblem. The Scots Greys adopted the captured French eagle as the regiment's badge. It is still the badge of the present regiment, the Royal Scots Dragoon Guards. The Emperor Napoleon is said to have commented of the regiment,
"Ah, ces terribles chevaux gris."
The rest of the British Army wryly gave the Royal Scots Greys the nickname of the Birdcatchers. After the battle, Sergeant Ewart was promoted ensign. The capture of the eagle was a powerful image in Victorian Scotland. Ewart died in England in 1846. His remains were buried in Edinburgh Castle. In the Battle of Waterloo, the British, Belgian, Dutch and Germans lost 15,000 casualties, or 1 in 4 of the men engaged. The Prussians lost 7,000 men killed and wounded. The casualties in the French army are estimated at 25,000 dead and wounded, 8,000 prisoners and 220 guns lost. Waterloo decisively saw the end of 26 years of fighting between the European powers and France. The French star was eclipsed, and the German began its ascendancy. For Britain, Waterloo is not just a battle, it is an institution, as well as a station. After the Battle of Waterloo, the 1st Foot Guards was given the title the Grenadier Guards, to commemorate the regiment's role in overthrowing the French Grenadiers of the Old Guard. All ranks were given the bearskin cap to wear. The 3rd Battalion of the British 14th Regiment fought at Waterloo. The battalion had been newly raised and was awaiting disbandment, having seen no service, when Napoleon escaped from Elba. The battalion crossed to Belgium and won the battle honour for the regiment. Most of the soldiers were under 20 years of age. The Emperor Napoleon, some years before Waterloo, presented to each of his marshals a silver snuffbox. Marshal Ney's snuffbox was looted from his carriage after the battle by a British officer. Some years later, the snuffbox was presented to the officers of the 19th Foot, the Green Howards, who used it in their mess for formal occasions. The 27th Inniskilling Regiment, in the course of Ney's cavalry attacks, was bombarded by a French horse artillery battery. By the end of the battle, the battalion had suffered 478 casualties from a pre-battle strength of 750. An officer from a nearby battalion, Captain Kincaid, commented that the 27th seemed to be lying dead in its square. Kincaid, a veteran of the Peninsular War, said, "I had never thought there would be a battle where everyone was killed. This seemed to be it." Corporal John Shaw of the 2nd Life Guards was a noted prize fighter and skilled swordsman. During the regiment's repeated charges at the Battle of Waterloo, Shaw was separated from his comrades and attacked by several French cuirassiers. Shaw is reputed to have killed 10 of them before being wounded by a colonel of cuirassiers, Shaw killed the colonel, fighting after his sword broke with his helmet as a bludgeon. Shaw crawled away and died during the night of his extensive injuries. Sir Walter Scott obtained a plaster cast of Shaw's skull. The cast is now in the Household Cavalry Museum. The 71st Highland Light Infantry captured a French cannon and fired the last shot of the Battle of Waterloo at the retreating French army. The Duke of Wellington spent his early army service as the Lieutenant Colonel of the 33rd Regiment. After the Duke's death, Queen Victoria permitted the 33rd to adopt the title the Duke of Wellington's Regiment, a fitting attribution for one of the army's most persistently successful regiments of foot. As the French cavalry approached for the attack, the 79th Cameron Highlanders formed square. Piper Mackay marched around the square, playing the pibroch Peace or War. The king subsequently presented Mackay with silver-minted pipes as a reward. In spite of their presence in the film Waterloo, the 88th Foot, the Connaught Rangers, was not present at Waterloo. They were on the far side of the Atlantic, fighting the Americans in the War of 1812. The 95th Rifles had three battalions at Waterloo. After the battle, the regiment was given the title of the Rifle Brigade in place of its number, which was reallocated to a newly raised infantry regiment. In the closing moments of the battle, a cannonball struck the Earl of Uxbridge as he rode with the Duke of Wellington. The Duke said, "By God, you've lost your leg." The Earl said, "By God, so I have." The remains of the leg were amputated in a house nearby, and the owner of the house buried the leg in his garden, a place of interest for some years. Every year after 1815, the Duke of Wellington held a Waterloo banquet for his officers. This banquet is still held. Captain Mercer of the British Horse Artillery described the miserable night he and his troop spent in the field of Waterloo before the battle, in the pouring rain. "My companion, the troop's second captain, had an umbrella, which, by the way, afforded some merriment to our people on the march. This we planted against the sloping bank of the hedge, and seating ourselves under it, he on the one side of the stick, me on the other side, we lighted cigars and became comfortable." The Duke, usually indifferent to the way his officers chose to dress, drew the line at umbrellas. Between 1830 and 1838, Captain William Siborne, after extensive research with veterans from the battle, produced a model of the Battle of Waterloo as at 7 p.m. on 17th June 1815. This model is in the National Army Museum in London. The Waterloo Medal was issued to every British officer and soldier who had taken part in the Battle of Waterloo, the Battle of Quatre Bras, or the Battle of Ligny. In addition, 2 years' seniority and pay was awarded. Each medal was inscribed with the recipient's name around the rim. That is the end of this podcast on the Battle of Waterloo. I hope you have enjoyed it and thank you for listening. I would invite you to look at the British Battles website on the battle, where you will find pictures of the battle and images of the regiments and soldiers that took part, with a number of maps of the battle, including a sequence of 3 maps showing the deployment of troops at 11 a.m., 4 p.m., and 7 p.m. during the battle.